Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Konnichiwa, motherfuckers. Welcome to a very special episode of the Video Nasty Project. What's so special about it, you ask? Because tonight, we're taking a look at a movie featuring the amazing Pam Grier and the late, great Sid Haig in Foxy Brown. Why don't you jive turkeys, check out the trailer, and we'll be back in a second.
When Foxy Brown comes to town, all the brothers gather round. 'Cause she can really shake 'em down.
Foxy lady, Foxy lady.
Pam Grier, that one chick hit squad who creamed you as coffee, is back to do a job on the mob as Foxy Brown.
You tell me who you want done, and I'll do the hell out of it.
A chick with drive who don't take no jive.
That woman, she's crazy. There's no telling what she'll do.
She's sweet brown sugar with a touch of spice.
If you see a man anywhere, send him in, because I do need a man.
And murder if you don't treat her nice.
Sounds like a public menace.
Sure do.
Foxy's got guts. No ifs, ands, or buts.
I better warn you, I got a black belt in karate.
And I got my black belt in bar stools.
She won't budge when she carries a grudge.
I want justice for all of them, whose lives are bought and sold, so that a few big shots can climb up on their backs.
Sister, I think what you're asking for is revenge.
So there ain't no hope for dudes who deal dope.
I swear, baby, I don't know what you're talking about.
We're gonna kill ourselves a couple of niggas.
Have no fear, Pam Grier is here as Foxy. Foxy Brown.
Yay, Foxy Brown!
Yes!
Oh God, we've tipped our hand to whether we liked it. Okay, you can skip to the end of the episode, never mind. So we just got done seeing Foxy Brown. So we've got Pam Grier as the as Foxy Brown, but we also have a large host of like supporting cast and folks that are in Jack Hill's repertoire, like
Antonio Vargas as Link Brown, her brother,
A.K.A. Huggy Bear.
Huggy Bear, and we've got Sid Haig,
the late great Sid Haig,
yes.
Who, okay, this movie. If there's one flaw with this movie, I'm going to say it is Sid Haig as a basically a cameo and not as like one of the bad guys, like right-hand man. That was a crime.
Yeah, he's an enabler in this movie. I mean, he's on screen for maybe 7 minutes or less.
He's a stoner extra.
Oh, we've got Colonel Ty from Battlestar Galactica.
Terry Carter.
So this has actually got a pretty decent cast to it.
So Link Brown, Foxy's brother, is running from Eddie and Bunyan, or Banyan, depending on which you go by, two thugs who work for Mr. Ethan and Mrs. Catherine.
And so Link, he is walking along, the trying to dodge the goons, and he winds up at this restaurant, this roadside cafe stand, taco stand.
Yeah. Taco stand, yeah.
And
taco and a coffee, $1.
Yeah. And he's all like, oh shit, I gotta call help.
And Foxy gets up and in Pam Grier style, of course, she's not wearing a whole lot, and proceeds to get Pam Grier dressed and goes out in her car and says, I'm gonna flash my lights 2 times and you get the hell out of Dodge. And this is where he starts stalling to get the guys off of his back.
And so she shows up and she almost runs over the two goons with her car, and like Link jumps on the in the sunroof, and one of the guys gets on the hood, and you get this, actually it's not much of a chase, but this is a pretty decent action beat to start the movie off.
Yeah, it's not actually a chase at all. All it is Foxy Brown trying to get this asshole off the front of her car. And the asshole in the front of her car going, "Stop! Let me off the car!
I'm going to die!
I got this bug on my car. I can't wipe it off. What the hell?"
And so the movie is essentially Link gets in trouble with these mobsters and is looking to get out from under their long reach. Meanwhile, Foxy and her boyfriend, who, Terry Carter, is, he was a cop.
Yeah, he got outed by the syndicate, our little conglomerate of evil.
And so Terry Carter, he gets magic plastic surgery, which gives him an all new face. And so he can go and live the life of religious freedom that he wants.
The problem is Foxy kept a clipping of him when he was in his previous incarnation, his normal life, and for some reason clipped it out of the newspaper, which is the deus ex machina that gets him in trouble.
The goons come by and gun poor old Terry Carter down, which then sets Foxy off on her roaring rampage revenge. She goes and infiltrates the organization as a hooker. She winds up with this other hooker. They go out on a job to go and service a judge at a party. And what the crime lady does is that she gets dirt on all the important people of the community. Senators and judges and anyone with influence. And so the judge, he is going to throw the case that he is going to be working on the next day and get a couple of the crime syndicate's men off the hook. And so Foxy and this other hooker basically throw the judge under the bus. Oh, look at that little winky.
Yeah, they kick him out into the hallway where you have the humorous, you know, women of good character beating him with umbrellas because he's, well, exposed in the hallway after the little winky scene.
And that scene was another part of the good acting that I loved about this movie. Here's the other hooker, the not Foxy hooker, and she is basically being controlled by the mafia, and you can't get away from these guys. Once they have their hooks in you, you are theirs for life. And so after the judge has been kicked out to the hallway and she realizes what she's done, she's pretty much breaking down and like realizing my life is now fucked. Mm-hmm. And I love those little basic human moments that this movie sprinkles throughout like that.
There's a lot of that there. There's a lot of things in the background that make the whole movie feel whole.
Now, one of the things that was really well set up in this movie is the character of Oscar. Now, he's this kind of Black Panther type, neighborhood watch. Oscar later gets Foxy after her boyfriend's death. He takes her to their headquarters, which is papered with the stuff that I recognize, being my parents were Black Panthers, so there's posters of, like, Angela Davis, who my mother knew, and then there's Black Power stuff and Blacks making love and shit like that. And so they basically have this stance that it ain't our neighborhood, it ain't our problem. We don't want, you know, we don't want to cause any trouble unless it comes to our doorstep. And Foxy's like, fuck that shit. You know, this guy killed my boyfriend. He killed people I love. He could kill people you love. You know, my boyfriend went out of his neighborhood, you know, to make things right. You got to do the same thing. And so she shames these guys and gets the Black Power thing going and revs them up to go take on these guys.
But the thing is, the Black Panthers were correct because the leader basically calls out Foxy on her bullshit, saying something to the equivalent of the, what you're asking for sounds an awful lot like revenge, mm-hmm. not justice.
Yeah.
And she's all like, you just handle the justice, I'll take care of the revenge. Mm-hmm. I really like that touch.
Yeah, that was a beautiful touch in there. One of the whole long series of gorgeous touches just throughout it that helped the whole thing feel consistent throughout.
Okay, as the representative of the Black community on the table, Black representation in movies like this is really huge to
the Black community. Yeah. She brought the whole idea that was percolating around and had come and was sort of ebbing away of Black Power not only being a thing where you go out and fight, but it's a ginning up of the forces. It's keeping a culture of basically disobedience to colonizers, basically, or a power structure that keeps people down. It's people communicating with each other in a lingo that is, you know, understandable between the people, like saying right on, out of sight, and stuff like that. You know, you dig, you know, we ain't stand for this shit. We is getting some. And the movie has a lot of language that today might seem antiquated, but was really in full in force when we were all kids.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
Ironically, a lot of some of the best movies were written by white writers like Graydon Clark, who wrote and directed Black Shampoo. Jack Hill did this and some of Pam Grier's other movies. But there was always a respect for the black community in many of the movies. These were the movies that didn't pander so much as present.
It wasn't like Roger Corman, where it's leave your dignity at the door. These movies, like Foxy Brown, the dignity is kept. The ones without dignity are the stupid ones. The two hicks out in the farm. Her brother, who really is not that bright.
But even the ones without dignity, like the two skeezy people on the sex farm, I thought were really interesting and compelling characters. Mm-hmm. Okay, they were complete pieces of shit.
Yeah.
But I thought they were interesting. And all the characters throughout the movie, the crime lady, mm-hmm. the skeezy people, everybody I thought was interesting and compelling in this movie.
And I want to say one thing about Link. He says some really interesting stuff that's really telling. You know, he says, look at me, I'm a black man. I don't know how to sing. I don't know how to dance.
I'm not tall. I can't play basketball.
Yeah. He's breaking down what the despair of being a black person. You're sitting against a building with an old burnt out building, and this is pretty much your life. What am I going to do? You know, no skills. I got to hustle.
And that's why movies like this were really super important to the black community, because all of a sudden, black voice, black representation on the silver screen. Up to this point, all the black characters had been step and fetchets and, you know, servants and stuff like that. So having Foxy is fucking huge.
Yeah, or secondary characters, you know, they're the supporting man. The supporting woman, they were never the lead, at least not in anything major. And sadly, this movie didn't make the first run theaters as much.
One of the other interesting things about Foxy's character is that she embraces her sexuality and is not afraid to use it as a weapon against the bad guys.
And her lovemaking scene with Michael Anderson, her boyfriend, is different from the seduction scenes, like with the judge, with she was with Claudia, who's the Chicana prostitute. When she's with Michael, it's her natural, you know, hair and stuff like that. And when she's out and about, it's a series of wigs, like the long straight hair to deal with the white men.
Of all the acting in the movie, Pam Grier towers above everybody. She is a goddamn force of nature in this movie. You just cannot take her eyes off of her through the entire movie.
And I gotta say, Antonio Fargas sells the hell out of this. I mean, he is kicking, he is bouncing off the floor, he is screaming his ass off. Holy shit, does he sell the pain of being shot in the side with a shotgun.
Just in general, I thought that Huggy Bear was a pretty decent actor, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's been spoofed so many times in so many different movies, like I'm Gonna Get You Sucka and stuff like that, you know?
Well, back to Black Dynamite, and Cream Corn is essentially Huggy Bear.
Yeah. Holy mackerel. You know, it was great to watch. Things really start ramping up when the syndicate catches up to Pam's complicity in the messing up the deal with the judges. She and Claudia go on the run. They take Pam to the farm, where the guys there basically take the heroin and they bag it up and whatnot and send it. They step on it a few times to increase the value. And so she is beset by the bald-headed, big Texas mustachioed, greasy-faced mechanic and the basically kind of like an urban... Kind of reminds me of Archie Bunker, minus the charm. And that's saying something, because Archie Bunker ain't got no fucking charm.
And up until this point of the movie, it's been this light, fun adventure movie. It's okay. It's serious in that, you know, blaxploitation always has an undercurrent of seriousness to it, but it's a fun movie. And then that scene happens. And let's face it, Foxy was raped in that scene. And so all of a sudden, it takes a pretty dark turn. and maintains that darker, not so goofy tone for the rest of the movie.
It speaks to her in this movie being a street fighter rather than your undercover cop special agent type. She is a kick-ass woman, and everybody acknowledges that she's kick-ass, but they don't present her as unstoppable.
They don't make a big deal of it. It's just kind of presented, here it is, take it as you will.
And she is presented as, I mean, she's hurt, she's dirty, you know, she's barefoot. This is the part where that reminds me of movies about slaves, where she is basically a slave to the slave owners. She looks like some 19th century, you know, runaway slave that got caught and brought back, and they try to tame her, and in this movie, it don't work.
All right, I get something we can touch on. Being that a blaxploitation movie, often these movies have very, very strong soundtracks. What did you guys think of the music?
This is another, I loved it. The music that they had going supported the movie. It didn't overwhelm the movie. It didn't go completely crosswise to the movie. It fit. It belonged there. It felt like it was an organic part of the movie.
Yeah, it had the sound of the time with the that sound to it. And like you said, it didn't overwhelm the movie. They brought it in when it needed to be brought in, usually to accentuate some kick-ass that was incipient. You know, whether it was Pam bringing it or after shit got ramped up after the disaster at the ranch where they lost all that heroin.
I would probably go with, like, the bigger names of the genre, like Shaft and Isaac Hayes. That was probably a stronger soundtrack for me, but I think that the one that Willie Hutch did was solid enough. It was fine. It wasn't outstanding, but it wasn't terrible. I enjoyed it.
So basically, after the farm disaster, Mr. Ethan and Miss Catherine have to figure out what the hell's going on. Miss Catherine puts two and two together. The one thorn in their side has been, the entire time has been Foxy, because she instigates shit. So they figure she's responsible for this, so we gotta get, gotta find out where the fuck she is and get our hands on her so we can kill her. And they go out and shake down Link. Ethan and the other two, the idiot, Banyan and Eddie, go to his apartment while he's making love with his girlfriend. They basically kick in the door with a sawed-off shotgun and blast the fuck out of him, and they cut his girlfriend's throat with a straight razor. I'm thinking, mm-hmm. God damn, this movie's brutal.
Even though that it was a shotgun, it wasn't really gory. The only real gore in the entire movie is probably the bit where the girlfriend got her throat slit. And even that, you don't see the slitting. You just see her head on the bed and this trickle of blood flowing out.
Yeah, Link has some blood here, but it's not really all that graphic. It's kind of just like TV level
splatters. Yeah, so their blood splatters that they had most of the time were, you know, this big at biggest, and they were that unique orangey color that has nothing to do with blood.
The Kensington gore.
Yeah. The blood coming from the throat was thick and going down, so that was actually much closer to a true blood color than anything else in the movie. But they don't show the slit throat. Never in this movie do you see something on that's supposed to be inside on the outside.
Can you indulge me in just a little bit of objectification for a moment?
Objectification?
Objectification.
Okay.
Pam Grier is fucking gorgeous. Oh my God.
They have definitely gone to no great lengths to make her look as gorgeous in costumes as possible without being cheap and tawdry. Gorgeous, you know, form-fitting, but not like a hooker or something like that until she actually gets into that part.
Yeah, she is an absolutely gorgeous woman. One of my things is how people move. So the shape of the face, that's all very interesting. The shape of the body, that's all very interesting. I love the folks like Jackie Chan, like Bruce Lee, like Pam Grier, because of how they move.
All right, the judges will accept that as an answer.
After Link gets murdered, Pam is taken to the headquarters. She talks the community guys into backing her revenge thing. They go and do a little spying and find out that the drug smugglers have a pilot who's going to go down to Mexico and then come back with the drugs and going to rendezvous out somewhere in the countryside outside of L.A. County.
Played by the late great Sid Haig.
So Pam basically gets all dollied up and goes to this bar where it's like the Han Solo bar. It's like where pilots go. And he's basically talking up a storm. Yeah, I'm the best pilot in these here parts. He's talking about a lady he knew. And then he says, hold on a second. Sees Pam eyeing him, taking some hair, curling around her finger. Goes over and says, hey, you know, starts, hey, what's a woman like you doing in a place like this type of thing?
Okay, for all the guys watching this, these kinds of pickup lines don't actually work. Unless she wants something mm-hmm. from you, specifically. So, this doesn't actually work. Fair warning.
So he's basically standing there and, you know, he says, give this dusky young lady anything she wants to drink. And she says, I've never been up in a plane before. Oh, ain't that just a shame. I happen to be the best pilot in these here parts. You know, and they're just teasing around each other. This is Pam and Sid in their prime, just teasing the hell out of the screen.
One of the things that I love about Jack Hill is that he is always laser focused with his dialogue. He knows how to write sharp, witty, fun dialogue.
And oh my God, did Sid get a chance to just basically put it on. I mean, he's got the hat, you know, tilted to the side and everything. He's got the clothing and stuff. And it's just, oh man, this is City Slicker Sid.
All right. I can't follow that up with anything. We're good. All right. Awesome.
The British censors were wrong.
Wrong, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, screw them.
Very
Fuck
wrong.
Fuck you, Mary Whitehouse. Yet again, here you are. So, obviously not a horror movie, not a nasty movie, but would you seize Foxy Brown?
No, I wouldn't.
All right, would you seize Foxy Brown?
No.
All right, defend those theses. Why would you not seize Foxy Brown?
The violence is around the same level of violence that you would see in a TV show. In most cases, there's a couple of notable exceptions right at the end.
You're thinking of the propeller with the plane and the poor dude getting chopped?
Yes. Right there at the end, there's a couple of scenes that exceed, you know, evening TV standards.
But even that wasn't necessarily a graphic act. Yes, it was violent. It was, mm-hmm. but it wasn't a blood spray. The scene of the bald mechanic getting killed in Raiders of the Lost Ark was much more violent mm-hmm. than this poor guy.
Yep. But still, the nature of the violence at the very end of the movie is such that there's no way you'd be able to get away with even implying that on TV.
My personal theory on why this movie got on the list was because blaxploitation at its very core, no matter if you're talking Shaft, if you're talking Foxy Brown, if you're talking anything in the genre, is inherently politically charged. And black empowerment to old white people would be very disturbing.
And plus there was the F word, the faggot, was thrown around by Foxy on a number of occasions. And if you were a gay person, you would definitely take offense to a woman just throwing it out the way she does when she's throwing it out at straight men. Because basically then by doing that, you're removing it from its original intent, which is to insult gays, but also it takes the historical use of the word and muddies it and turns it into something that's just like trash, just like used toss. And that's more insulting than hurling at somebody who's actually gay.
And yet in this movie, in a blaxploitation movie, we have a lesbian bar. Not only that, when you look around at the demographic in the bar, white, Hispanic, black, just lesbian was the qualifier.
So, you wouldn't seize it. I'd let it off the hook, even though I could totally see why the white, uptight blue hairs would get upset. So, all right, keep the movie. It passes. Did you like Foxy Brown?
Oh my gosh, yes. The vivid imagery they have going, the variety of characters they have. There's some pretty good acting in here for a B-style movie or an exploitation-style movie. The storyline's basic, you know, drug dealer, fight the drug dealers, kick them out.
Well, much
get
like
your vengeance.
Yeah, much how like we for Firecracker, where drugs was a prominent theme. Again, it's a prominent theme in blaxploitation.
This one had a bit more plot beads and a bit less fight. I loved the fact that Foxy Brown was shown as somebody who's able to kick ass and take names. She wasn't the ultimate martial artist in this one. She could be taken down. She was obviously supposed to be a street fighter in this one, not like in some of her other roles where she is the ultimate fighter.
Yeah, this is a solid movie helmed by a guy who is, you know, just a pro. This is put together really well. I mean, it has some really cheesy fight scenes, and you expect that. I mean, these kind of fight scenes were spoofed in Black Dynamite.
It was almost bordering on the Star Trek Captain Kirk two-fisted chop thing. It was very loosey-goosey with the fighting, but, you know, fuck it, I don't care.
They made it look good. That's really what matters here. I mean, let's face it, William Shatner could not throw a punch to save his life, but they made it look good for the era. This is another one where they made it look good for the era if your standard isn't the Hong Kong films.
I love the fuck out of this movie. It's not my favorite Pam Grier movie, though. I think I would have to go with Black Mama, White Mama, but for an entry-level movie into the blaxploitation genre, this is a strong, solid entry, and you could do much worse than this movie.
It's just one of those movies that I love. This is my favorite Pam Grier movie, probably, even more than Friday Foster, which has Yaphet Kotto in it.
All right, we love the fuck out of this movie. Go watch this movie. Enthusiastic sums up all around.
Oh, yeah.
Satisfy the kiddies with a bag of crisp, crunchy popcorn. And don't forget to get an extra bag or two to take to the car to munch on during the show. You will also want to take a supply of ice-cold soft drinks or delicious, flavorful coffee to keep you refreshed throughout the next show. Make the evening complete by getting a tasty treat for yourself and every member of your party. Make your visit to our theater a pleasant occasion to be remembered. We'll be richly rewarded with the thought that we have pleased you.
Thank you for hanging around and watching us as we get into the only Pam Grier movie on the list, and that's a damn shame. Only a Sid Haig movie left on the list too, I think, and that too is a damn shame. So, I want you to drop us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. Oh, and next week, I almost forgot, next week, a little independent horror movie that you might have heard of. Next week, it's Friday the 13th. So, until that time, I want you to stay evil.
Who does she think she is?
Well, that's my sister, baby. And she's a whole lot of woman.